Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester, and I'm on Twitter at BobbyFantasyPro. We've got a Rookies and Dynasty Prospects podcast today with our guest, Steve Gardner of USA Today Sports. He's on Twitter at Steve A. Gardner. Steve, how's it going?
Doing great, Bobby. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'll tell you what, though, I can't really get over the fact that you sniped me about 80 times in that mock draft we did.
Well, I'll tell you what, that was fun, and it's very unpredictable at this time of year, certainly, and I'm sure you'll get your chance to get back at me, and another one coming up soon.
Absolutely. You know, it's really encouraging, though, like when we're doing these mock drafts, especially in December and January, and people that you really respect in the industry are taking the guys that you want in the rounds you think they belong in, because we're trying to figure out, like, where do they fit so we can recommend it to people, and that's why we do all these mock drafts, is so we can get prepared. And speaking of which, we've got this tool called Draft Wizard. I'm sure you guys have heard of it and used it in the past. It's already up. If you want to start mocking your drafts, you can do it now. It takes about 5 minutes, 7 minutes to run through a draft. You can do it against the experts' rankings. You can set it to your own customized league settings. Draft Wizard is an excellent tool, and practice makes perfect. You want to make your mistakes now and learn from them rather than do it during your live draft. Steve, let's move on and get right into it with a top prospect, Vlad Jr. Is he going to break camp with the Blue Jays?
I don't think so. I think the Blue Jays are going to play that service time game and keep him down for at least a couple of weeks to start the season. It only makes sense considering how great a prospect he is. But in terms of when he does get the call, and I think it'll be soon, I look for a guy who can hit the ground running. And when we say hit, that's something he does awfully well. One of the best hitting prospects I think we've seen in an awful long time, and he could certainly make a difference this season.
I absolutely agree. I mean, I think he's polished. Obviously, he's only 19 years old at the end of last season. I think he turns 20 here in April, which is just ridiculous, because you look at what he's done in the minor leagues. He hit .381 last year, .437 on base, his slugging was .636. He steals some bases, hits a lot of homers. I think the stolen bases will change, but I mean, you talk about how good of a prospect this guy is. I think he might not be hyped up quite enough, because you look at the last 30 years, we've got A-Rod, Ken Griffey Jr., Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, Albert Pujols, Miguel Cabrera. His stats compare favorably to all of them. Same age, same leagues. He has been the best.
Yeah, we'll be putting him in that group. I feel very confident. You know, I got a chance to see him in the Arizona Fall League for the first time in person, and it's amazing. You know, even though all I got to see was one game, he had a hit in the Arizona Fall League that had an exit velocity of 107 miles per hour. I mean, just ridiculous. And, you know, only a handful of major leaguers, maybe 10, all of last season had an exit velocity that high. I mean, that's the kind of skill level we're talking about. And, you know, it just happened in one game that, happened to be in front of a few thousand people. I can't wait to see him display those skills in the major leagues.
He's 19 years old. Yeah, I mean, I don't think he has as much power as somebody like Harper or Trout. He's never going to hit 50 homers, but he could be someone that, you know, leads the league in batting average 5, 6, 7 years. His bat is that good. And frankly, I could even see him doing it as a rookie. He hit .381 last year in the minors. I could see him batting .310, .320. And last year, that would have been right up there with the top guys.
I looked at some of the preseason projections. Steamer, which is by nature conservative in its preseason projections, has Vlad Jr. hitting .306 with 22 homers, 75 RBIs, and that's only in 138 games. So I think really the key with him is not how good he is or what his talent is in terms of his fantasy value. It's how much playing time he's going to get. When are the Blue Jays going to call him up? And when we know that, then I think we can be confident in what kind of contributions he can make to the Blue Jays and to a fantasy team.
I agree. And I've never seen Steamer be that bold on a prospect. And I guess you can't call it bold because it's Vlad Jr. Like, that's still probably conservative. But yeah, I agree. Where would you draft him if you knew that he was going to break camp with the team?
Wow. I think I would have him maybe up into the top 20 or 25. I mean, I look at my early rankings, and I'm going to come out with a top 200 here probably in the next week or so. Just at this point in the season, I've got him at number 37 overall. And I think that's, you know, that's very aggressive, but at the Arizona Fall League, we had a couple of drafts there, and he went in the second round in two of them. And so, I mean, there are people that was kind of a draft and hold format, though, 50-round draft and hold. So in that kind of setup, I think you maybe need to be a little bit bolder. But my goodness, yeah, and even my dog thinks that was a little too high for a rookie coming in. But I mean, the skills are just off the charts. And if we knew that he was going to be a starter from day one, and you know, and play 150, 155 games, I think you could justify moving him up that high.
You know, I'm starting to come around to the idea. I've got him higher than the expert consensus ranking, which has him down there around 78 right now, right next to Will Myers, Mitch Haniger, Gleyber Torres, Raul Alberto Mondesi. And, you know, I think that's a little bit low. I think people are going to come around on that the more of this kid that they see. But having him that high didn't make sense to me. But now that I'm looking at it, like, Charlie Blackmon, where's he going in drafts? Third round? Here's his Steamer projections. 287 batting average, 26 homers, 77 RBIs, 99 runs, and 13 steals. That's Vlad. If Vlad is on the field, he's Charlie Blackmon right away.
Amazing, yeah. And so, yeah, I wonder, though, you know, how aggressive the Blue Jays will be. And the thing is, though, if you're in a format where you can, you know, draft him and then put him on the bench, you get not only his stats for the whole season when he does come up, but whatever player you have as a replacement added on to that makes his draft slot even more valuable.
You know, I love Vlad. I would love to have him in a dynasty league. And frankly, I think people are going to think, oh, well, I've seen these prospects kind of flame out. I'm going to sell high on Vlad. It's not selling high. You can still buy low on Vlad because people don't realize just how good he's going to be. I honestly would compare him to Albert Pujols or Miguel Cabrera. That's not hyperbole. He is that good. He's that same type of player.
I agree with that. That's some great comps just because, you know, those are guys that built a little bit more stockily than, you know, a Mike Trout or a Ronald Acuna. But in terms of pure bat-to-ball skills, I think he ranks comparably with those guys, and those guys are some of the best that we've ever seen in this generation.
Absolutely. Let's move on to the next guy who's kind of going under the radar because of how good Vlad is. But most years, Eloy Jimenez would be the number one prospect. This year, he's probably two, maybe three or four on some lists. He plays for the White Sox, and he's extremely polished as well. I could see him breaking camp with the White Sox, but I'm not sure it makes sense for them.
Yeah, I kind of thought that they may give him a look last year, but they didn't. I mean, he was tearing up AAA with a, you know, average of 350, on base of 400, slugging 600. He's really got nothing more to prove in the minor leagues. But again, we'll see the service time game played, I'm sure, since they didn't bring him up last year. But in terms of you know, the best player on the White Sox, or the best outfielder, certainly, unless they go out and sign Bryce Harper, Jimenez is that guy for them. And I think you could see, if the White Sox are serious about Manny Machado, for instance, we could see how all in the White Sox are on this season if they go out and sign Machado. I think that's great for Eloy Jimenez, because you're going to see him in the majors sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and right now I'm looking at where he's ranked, right next to Gregory Polanco, Stephen Biscotti, a few guys like that. And I think he's worth more than that if he breaks camp. Like, if he's not going to be called up till mid-season, obviously that would be risky. But this guy is extremely, extremely good. He's super polished, maybe as polished as Vlad Jr. is. His ceiling's not as high, but that's not really a fair comparison, because we're talking about one of the greatest prospects of all time in Vlad Jr. But we're talking about someone, again, who's going to hit 300. He's going to hit 30, 40 homers some year, just no steals. And frankly, he reminds me a little bit of Manny Ramirez. Now, different body types. Manny was, you know, 6 foot, 220 pounds. Eloy Jimenez is 6'4", 205. He's a beast, but same type of player. And that is really good territory.
Oh, yeah. And the ability to hit for average as well as power, I think, is huge for him. So, yeah, we're definitely going to look forward to his arrival in Major League Baseball.
I think there's a pretty big drop up after Vlad and Eloy Jimenez, and it's kind of weird to put someone in Vlad's territory. But in terms of rookies, I think Aloy is closer to Vlad Jr. than he is number three on this list. It's Victor Robles, who I was really excited about last year. I think we all were, and then he had the injury. He got passed up by Juan Soto, who nobody was talking about. I mean, we thought he was 2 years away, but he ended up being great. Victor Robles is more of a defensive guy, speed guy, but he's still going to help in all facets of the game.
Really, really good speed, and I think that's what makes him a good defensive center fielder. Going to make him a terror on the bases. And, you know, Washington, if you've got Trey Turner and Victor Robles, you know, batting maybe next to each other at the top of that order, it's going to be a different look, obviously, for the Nationals if Bryce Harper signs elsewhere. But that's a terror up at the top there with the speed that those guys and the havoc.
And if you get eaten right, yeah.
Yeah, the havoc that they can wreak on the bases, that would be a treat to watch. But I think one of the things, too, is that Robles does have a little bit of power. Maybe not as much as we saw with Juan Soto, but more speed. And you know, a year ago, he was the guy that everybody was talking about in the Washington farm system. You know, Juan Soto was still too young to really even be considered. And then because of the injury and the Nationals just pretty much running out of outfielders, that sort of necessitated them giving Juan Soto a chance. And the way that he hit the ground running, I don't know that anybody could have forecasted that. And it overshadowed, I think, you know, just how good Victor Robles is, because everybody was concentrating and with justifiably so about how great Juan Soto had turned out to be. So, yeah, it's really exciting for Washington with those two guys in the outfield. They could be there for many, many years to come.
Assuming they don't sign Bryce Harper, it looks like Robles is going to be in the lineup right away, which I guess that's why he's ranked just 8 spots overall behind Aloy Jimenez. I don't really see these two even close. I think Jimenez is more of a Mitch Haniger, Eddie Rosario type of player right off the bat. Robles is more raw and long-term. He's kind of like a Brandon Phillips in the outfield. You know, he's going to win a gold glove, bat 280, hit 15, 20 homers, steal 30 bases. That's a great player. It's a really good MLB player. Just in terms of fantasy, I think he's way behind Aloy Jimenez.
Yeah, I do. And I think, you know, obviously the playing time is the big factor, the big variable that we would love to know for all the players, you know, going into the season. But I've got him a little bit higher than Jimenez in my outfield rankings right now. I see kind of a similar player as Byron Buxton. And as we know with Buxton, a guy who has shown some flashes but also been very, very bad. And so that's what you get kind of with prospects as well. The guys certainly have a lot of great physical skills, but putting it all together in the major leagues until we've seen them do that. And I know we just said the exact opposite for guys like Jimenez and Vlad Guerrero. But I think for most of the other prospects on the list, you do need to see them succeed a little bit at the majors before you are confident in relying on them in fantasy.
I like the Buxton comp. Maybe a little less speed than Buxton. Maybe not as good in the outfield. I do think Robles will win some gold gloves, but Buxton's, I mean, he's as good as it gets. Him and Harrison Bader out there are phenomenal. But Victor Robles has a better eye than Buxton. I don't think he'll strike out quite as much. So I do think he's more of a reliable, sure thing, but he's still kind of raw as well. I do like that comp. The next guy on the list, I actually have him fairly close to Robles as well. It's Kyle Tucker. I just don't know if he's going to be able to play for Houston. I mean, I hope they trade him because I want to see Kyle Tucker play. Last year, 24 homers, 20 steals in just 100 games. He batted .332. This guy's ready for the big leagues too.
And I thought that we would see him as an everyday player from the get-go before the Astros signed Michael Brantley in free agency. And I think that kind of blocked Tucker, or at least maybe stunted his growth a little bit. The Astros, I suppose, can afford to send him back to the PCL, but again, nothing to prove there. I mean, I think he was the MVP of the league last season. So, yeah, a very exciting prospect, a very exciting team. And should, you know, somebody get hurt or something like that, and Brantley's not been the picture of health throughout his career, Tucker could be right there to step in and hit the ground running again.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me. I want to give comps to all these guys just to let people picture, you know, who they might be in the major leagues. I think Grady Sizemore when I see Kyle Tucker play. And he's going to hit 30 homers. He's going to steal 25 bases. He's going to bat right there around 280, 290 every single year. That's a really good player. I mean, he's not really an MVP candidate, but that's an all-star most years.
Oh yeah, most definitely. You know, a nice left-handed swing. Kind of a tall guy too. You know, he's 6'4", so it maybe there's some adjustments to the way that pitchers pitch him with a pretty big strike zone. But still, again, as you said, he can do it all. Hit for power, speed, everything. Just needs an opportunity.
And he's only 190 pounds. So while he fills out, he'll add more power, probably lose some speed. That's a good trade-off. I think that he's going to have a good long career for Dynasty Leagues. Nick Senzel, someone I was really excited about last year. It never developed because he was dealing with a myriad of injuries, right? But Nick Senzel is a true five-tool player. He's going to hit for average. He's going to hit homers. He's going to steal bases. He's going to contribute in all those categories while playing second base, third base, shortstop, outfield. I love Senzel.
You know, they had moved him around even last spring. I remember getting a chance to see him, and the Reds were putting him at shortstop. You know, came up as a third baseman. They were looking at him at shortstop, maybe some outfield, and played most of the year last year in the minor leagues at second base. So that's something that I think we can look forward to, him breaking into the major leagues there at that position. But Scooter Jeanette is there for the Reds right now. I don't know. You know, maybe he becomes that sort of, you know, utility guy that can get plugged in any number of different places. And that's how he gets his way to, you know, 400 at bats or something like that. The question is, again, you know, will the Reds, do they see themselves as a team that may be a contender this season and they push him a little bit further, a little bit quicker? Or do they hold off and maybe wait until, you know, after the Super 2 deadline or later on and just hold him in the minor leagues until September? You know, the lack of minor league experience at AAA, I think, is one reason they could justify keeping him down. But, you know, he hit awfully well against that top level competition there in the minors. Great on base percentage, you know, good eye, that sort of thing. So I don't know how much more he could gain from being in the minor leagues.
You know, I think in Cincinnati, you got Suarez at third, you got Peraza at short, you got Jeanette at second base. In the outfield, you just added Matt Kemp, you've got Yasiel Puig. All these guys, I don't think that he's going to play right away. It's going to take an injury. And the Reds, I don't think they're going to compete. They've got some bats, obviously, a great lineup, but they need pitching. Maybe they go out and get Corey Kluber. That's been the rumor lately. But if that happens, they might need to trade Senzel, and he might end up with the Padres actually in a three-way trade. If Senzel gets traded and he can, you know, start in the major leagues, I would like him a lot more. But as of now, I'm not drafting him. His ECR is 2.19. That's too high for me. I mean, that's in the same range as guys like Tyler Glasnow, who, you know, has a huge ceiling. You know he's going to be in the big leagues. Willie Adames, who we saw do it for a stretch of time. We know he's going to be in the big leagues. There's a lot of guys like that you can draft. I love the upside of Senzel, but I don't think it's going to happen right away. I think he's going to end up being dropped within a couple weeks of the season.
I agree. I think that's the big question mark for him. Yeah, it's one of those cases where, gosh, you just mentioned the Padres. If he were to go there and play third base for them with the prospects that they have coming up around the infield, that could be a fun infield to watch.
That would be brilliant, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here's my my favorite guy of the year, my number one sleeper. I have to get him in every single league or I'm probably going to cry. It's Josh James. Gotta have him.
I'll tell you what, you know, got a taste of the majors last season with the Astros, who have done a great job at bringing along prospects. I'll tell you what, you know, a guy that can certainly, you know, strike guys out and a fabulous K rate throughout the minors, can get into the upper 90s with his fastball. There's a whole lot to like there. At this point, I'd have to say that I don't know what you think, but I'd have to think that he's got a very good chance at being in that Astros rotation from the get-go.
Exactly. Obviously, you had Dallas Keuchel, who I don't think they're going to re-sign. Charlie Morton's already gone with the Rays. There's a reason they didn't re-sign these guys. They've got Josh James, and they've got Forrest Whitley coming down the pipeline as well. Framber Valdez has a chance at being in the rotation at the start of the year, but I really think this is Josh James' job to lose. He was just phenomenal in the minors last season. 171 Ks in 114 innings with just 79 hits allowed. I mean, that is just filthy dominant. That is so unbelievably good. I think he comes up into the major leagues right away and strikes out 10, maybe even 11 Ks per nine. He's going to be awesome. I could see him pitching 160 innings with 200 Ks.
Fantastic. And, you know, it's not like he's, young and unpolished, too. You know, he's 25. So he's had some time in the minor leagues to develop his craft. And I think what we saw from him last season, even in the majors, with the 2.35 ERA and whip under one, that's somebody that we definitely want to keep an eye on. And I don't blame you for wanting to get him in all your leagues this year.
I'm going to reach on him quite a bit just to make sure that I can get him. I just think he's safe in terms of the ratios. He's not going to get you a ton of innings, probably won't pitch 5 innings every single game, so you can't really bank on a dozen wins or anything like that. But that's not the game that I play when I'm playing fantasy baseball. I'm going for those ratios, and I want the high strikeout guys. His ECR right now is 259, right next to the next guy on our list, who's 260, Alex Reyes. I love him as well, but I don't know if he's going to be in the rotation.
That's a real question. You know, when he was coming back from injury last season, the Cardinals were talking about starting him in the bullpen, moving him into the rotation maybe if things worked out and progressed. He was so dominant in his minor league rehab starts that they said, okay, well, we'll put him in the rotation, and then boom, you know, that lat injury ended his season. So, again, trying to come back. I think they want him as a starter, and obviously...
That's what they've said. Yeah, they've said they want him in the rotation. They anticipate it happening, but... They've got so many pieces. They've got 9 starting pitchers.
Yeah, but when you talk about in terms of pure skill and ability, I don't know that anybody is better than he is. He could be.
He's better than Carlos Martinez. He's better than Jack Flaherty. Yeah, he's their ace if he's healthy.
Exactly. So if he can get to that point where you can get the injury concerns out of the way and just have him pitch every fifth day, you've got a potential ace on your hands.
Yeah, I'm looking at his stats from last year. He pitched 27 innings from the minor leagues and major leagues. He struck out 46 batters, so 18 Ks for 9 innings, and he allowed 10 hits in those 23 innings, 0 runs. This guy was just dominant. He is a perennial Cy Young contender in the making, but I wonder, they've got all these pitchers, right? They could be tempted to just say, okay, we've got Reyes as our closer, we've got Andrew Miller, we've got Jordan Hicks. If we have a lead going into the 7th inning, we win.
Yeah, that would be one way. But, you know, still, I think about all the debates between a lights-out closer and a number 3 starter. That number 3 starter is still much more valuable than any closer could ever be, just because of the number of innings. So I would not want to hide his immense talent somewhere in the bullpen and just bring him in save situations, which we see a lot of managers manage their closer in that way, and they get what, maybe 50 or 60 innings sometimes in an entire season. I'd much rather want him to have at least twice that as a starting pitcher.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and they traded Luke Weaver, which I think clears a spot for Alex Reyes to find his way into the rotation, assuming health, which is always a question mark. But right now his ECR is 260. He's going to go undrafted in most leagues, regardless of whether we know the answer of if he's going to be in the rotation or if he's going to be the closer. I want to draft him either way. The upside is just too good. I could see him having a season. I'm not going to go as far as saying Blake Snell, but that breakout season, like Trevor Bauer, right away, Walker Buehler, one of the best pitchers in the league. And if you can get him outside of your top 160, 170 picks, and you can, I think you've got to do it. I want Josh James and Alex Reyes everywhere.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, again, last year or a couple of years ago at this time, I remember going to spring training and Reyes was suspended. Remember, that was a 50-game suspension that he served at the beginning of the year. And but going into that year, he was the number one pitching prospect in all of baseball, ahead of Walker Buehler and everybody else. I mean, he's that good. The fastball can get up near 100. I think, he's a guy that certainly, if he's available where he is right now in ADP, is definitely worth jumping on.
He is an absolute beast. We take a big step down now to the next tier, and I don't really like rookie catchers, but some people are going to be drafting Danny Jansen. He's going to be starting for the Blue Jays. ECR 262. What do you think about Jansen? Is he a top 15 catcher right away?
Well, the question is, what is a top 15 catcher worth? Maybe he is, but I'll tell you what, I don't know that I've ever seen catcher as thin and as horrid as what this year's crop looks like. I mean, you could basically punt on catcher and take zeros. Even in a two-catcher league, you might be able to take zeros there and still be okay, because I don't see a whole lot of guys that are going to give positive value. And Jansen, though, for his, you know, in his defense, probably could give you positive value. I mean, he does have some pop. You know, hit double-digit home runs in the minors last season at AAA in half a season. So I think there is some possible value there. And with playing time, you're going to get some counting numbers. As long as he doesn't, you know, go in the tank and hit 220, then he's going to be a decent guy to look for. So, yeah, I just see maybe a couple of top elite kind of players at the position. And then, you know, as it was said in that memorable line from Moneyball, 50 feet of crap, and whoever else is after that. I don't see a whole lot of value in catcher at all this year.
You know, this is going to sound funny. I'm looking at his Steamer projections, 11 homers, 41 RBIs, 256 batting average. That looks pretty good to me, Steve. I mean, if you know the catcher landscape this year, that looks all right to me. I mean, I posted this a couple weeks ago. JT Realmuto was the only catcher to bat over 241 with at least 56 runs scored. That's it. He was the only one. Whew.
Ugly, ugly, ugly.
Yeah, it is. It's bad.
You know what I think it is, not to get on too much of a tangent, but I think the emphasis on framing and defense and how much that helps a team, I think that plays into why catchers who aren't necessarily very good offensively continue to get playing time, and that contributes to the, you know, the overall lack of offensive numbers from catchers across the board.
Yeah, his ECR right now is catcher number 11, ahead of Jorge Alfaro, Willington Castillo. I think Austin Hedges is going to come up, assuming he gets traded. Astudillo is gonna come up because he's just crushing it right now in the Winter League, I think down in Venezuela. So Jansen's going to be right on the fringe of a catcher one. It seems kind of weird, but I'm kind of talking myself into it. And that's why we have these conversations, so we can figure out what we want to do.
Yeah, that's exactly where I have him. I have him catcher 11 right now.
Okay. Peter Alonso is another guy. I'm not sure if he's going to play right away for the Mets, but if anyone's ready for the big leagues, it's him.
He certainly showed that he should have gotten a look last year, but again, the Mets kept him down in the minor leagues to work on his defense, I think was the official word. But no, this guy definitely has the power stroke, and a couple of times I've seen him live, one in the Futures game, hit a massive home run, and you know, one of the longer home runs I've seen at Nats Park.
It's a 100-mile-per-hour fastball too, wasn't it?
Unbelievable. Oh, that was in the Fall League, where Nate Pearson of Toronto was throwing 103 or 104, and Alonso took him deep. So, you know, those are the only times I've been able to watch him in person, and he's been very impressive each of those. So the power is there. The contact, you know, is a little bit suspect, but still.
Still batted 285 last year. That's not bad.
Yeah, I mean, he'll strike out, but how many guys are there in the major leagues now that trade a little bit of a batting average for power? That's what you do. That's the winning formula, and he can certainly give them that. So, yeah, the question is, what do the Mets do? Do they bring him up? Do they start him immediately? Great question. Again, comes back to playing time, but in terms of skills, I think he's definitely got the power skills to play in the major leagues and be, I don't know, maybe a top 20 first baseman. Again, I've got him a little bit lower than that because we don't know what the Mets are going to do.
His ECR right now is 246, so he's going around the same range as guys like Brandon Belt, like Trey Mancini. I'd rather have the upside there than Jake Bowers. I'd rather have the upside with Alonso and not know what you're going to get. Maybe he doesn't start right away, so what? If you drop him, you pick up Josh Bell, and there's not really that big of a difference. But if Alonso starts right away, I think you've got yourself a very good first baseman. I'm not saying he's going to be Rhys Hoskins, but he can be Matt Olson right away. You look at what Peter Alonso did last year. Not only does he have the best batting eye of any hitter in the top 100 prospects, he walked 76 times in 132 games. He hit 68 extra base hits in those 132 games, 119 ribbies. And I get it. He was playing in Las Vegas, which is a little bit like Coors Field, but the guy can rake.
You know what? Interesting thing. I remember at the Futures game, people were talking to him after it and talking about his home run. And one of the questions that he was asked was, you know, did it feel good? Did it feel really good like you got that one when you hit it out? it was an interesting response from him. He's like, no, I didn't really feel anything. And that's when you know that it's hit really well, is when you don't really feel it. I thought that was a kind of a unique response that stuck with me. It sounds to me like a real professional power hitter talking when he can say that.
You know who he reminds me of? Is Brian Urlacher. He's built the same way. He's 6'3", 245 pounds, and he is just a beast.
Well, then if he gets a chunky soup commercial, then we'll come full circle.
There you go. A lot of people like Garrett Hampson. It looks like he's going to start at second base with LeMahieu now on the Yankees. He's going to be playing in Coors Field. He's a power speed guy. What do you think about Garrett Hampson this year as a rookie?
You know, I didn't get a lot of opportunity to see him last year, so I'm not really, my perception of him is not really formulated really well. I don't really have a good feel for him, but, you know, from the numbers, great on-base percentage, and I think that will help a lot, especially at Coors Field. A guy who can get on base with, you know, the ability to be on base when other guys are coming up and driving him in, I think that's huge. And if he's hitting in front of Blackman and Arenado, then he's going to score a ton of runs. And I think that's where, you know, kind of where DJ LeMahieu's value was and where Hampson's value was. So I applaud the Rockies. I think it's a pretty good move for them, just plugging him in there to LeMahieu's spot and letting him roll. It's, there's a lot of upside there. But again, he's 23, 24. You don't know exactly how he's going to do because he didn't have a whole lot of experience against major league pitching last season. But what we did see is pretty darn good.
Yeah, I think he's going to end up being a better version than DJ LeMahieu. I don't know if it happens right away as a rookie, but he's going to be someone who bats about 290. And then if you look at his stats in the minor leagues, 123 steals in 305 games. That'll play in the major leagues. Like you mentioned, he gets on base. He's going to score a bunch of runs in that lineup. He'll qualify at second. He'll play some at short as well. Maybe he'll even play some outfield. He got some center field into the minors. He's going to be a useful fantasy piece going forward. Now, what do you think? Would you rather have him or someone like Ian Happ, Paul DeJong, Willy Adames?
I'm sort of partial to Paul DeJong, to tell you the truth.
Are you? Okay.
I am. Again, another one of those guys that swings and misses a lot, but good contact and power on contact. I think the home runs, certainly, you know, DeJong is a guy that is much more impressive than I think any of the rest of those guys to me from a power standpoint. I think that's what you get a little bit of an advantage at shortstop if you can get a guy that can hit some home runs. So it personal preference for me depends certainly on what your roster looks like. But I kind of like Paul DeJong, to tell you the truth.
You know, I'm looking at him right now. His 162-game average in the major leagues, 32 homers, 97 RBIs, 89 runs. He's batting .263, not bad at all. That's a good fantasy player.
Yeah.
He's going really underrated right now.
Yeah, and I like him. He was on one of my title-winning teams last year, so maybe that clouds my perception a little bit.
There you go.
But, yeah, he's a guy that the power is definitely no fluke. He hit home runs in the minor leagues, hit him in the major leagues, and is passable at shortstop defensively. So it's not like he's going to be, you know, bumped out of the starting lineup because they need defense.
Yeah, it was actually above average last year, which really surprised a lot of people because I thought he was a long-term second baseman or third baseman. And now I said Hampson was a better version of LeMahieu. That's in fantasy. LeMahieu's obviously a gold glove second baseman. Hampson is not that. But in fantasy baseball, I think Hampson's a really good piece moving forward. The last player I want to talk about here before we get into a couple prospects, actually we've got a couple other guys to stash and some Asian imports here. Luis Urias, we talked about him. He's probably going to be playing second base, maybe even shortstop for the Padres right away.
Yeah, he was impressive. I remember seeing him in the fall league. I like the way he makes contact and gets on. Not a power hitter by any means, but he did have, it was interesting, one of the games that I did see him in the fall league, he hit a home run, which was, you know, his first, I think, in the fall league after only hitting a few during the regular season. So he's a guy that I think can get on base. Reminds me a lot of when I saw Adam Eaton as a young player in the fall league. Always seems to be in the middle of rallies. His team, you know, always doing something to help his team win. So that's some qualities that, you know, you can't really quantify, I guess, for fantasy, but you know, Adam Eaton turned out to be a pretty good player in the major leagues. So getting on base, I think that's huge. He does that very, very well. Not a lot of power, but will occasionally surprise you, you know, with his gap power. And I think that's where, you know, his contributions in fantasy will lie, as somebody who can get on base, score a bunch of runs, and not necessarily steal a whole lot of bases, because he hasn't done that over his career, but decent enough speed to be productive and score a lot of runs.
These little guys like Jose Altuve and Adam Eaton and Urias, they go under the radar prospects-wise because people think, well, he's not that big. How big can his ceiling actually be? He's not going to hit 20 home runs. But as we've seen with Altuve, you can do that.
It's bat speed, it's contact, ability to square the ball up. And now, you know, we're able to see in the stats, like the StatCast stats of barrels, about how guys, you know, when they hit it and square it up and how frequently they do that. And, you know, some of these guys, these little guys, can be surprisingly high on those lists.
You're absolutely right. I don't love him right away because he's going to be playing in San Diego, when he was playing in El Paso last year, which is one of the best hitters parks in the minor leagues. I don't think the power is really going to be there. Maybe he'll hit 5 home runs this year, bat 260. That's not bad, but I mean, that's like, you know, Jeff McNeil, Nico Goodrum. That's about where he's being drafted as well. I wouldn't reach for him whatsoever. I just don't think there's enough upside.
Yeah, and one of the things too, he's a valuable bench player when you get into your drafts, especially mixed leagues, because he's going to play, you know, some shortstop and second base, and will qualify probably at both of those if he hasn't, you know, doesn't already in the first few months of the season. He will later on.
There's two guys who are coming over from Asia. Yusei Kikuchi is coming over from Japan. Merrill Kelly used to be a Rays prospect. He's coming over from Korea, and he was really good last year in Korea, which is like, you play every game there is like playing in Coors Field, and he was leading the league in ERA, had a lot of strikeouts, or maybe it was the reverse. And Kikuchi's kind of an upside play. I compared him to Zach Wheeler in our last podcast. Do you think we can trust either of these guys right away, or is it kind of a wait and see?
I don't know. I like Kikuchi. I think, you know, he's a couple-year all-star in Japan over the last couple of years. He's younger, and I think he's the kind of guy that can come over. We saw, you know, Miles Mikolas last year, one of those not-so-heralded guys coming over from Asia, that had a fantastic season. I won't say that Kikuchi will do what Mikolas did, but I think he can succeed and be a solid, you know, number three type starter. I don't know with Kelly. He's older. I think he's 30. And I think it's a little bit more challenging for him to be successful on the major league level.
His stuff's nowhere near as good as Kikuchi.
And that's the other thing, too.
But we said the same thing about Mikolas last year, too.
Yeah, that's true. But the one thing about Mikolas was that his control was fabulous, and was one of the better guys in terms of not walking batters. You can we've seen that if you're a pitcher with that kind of pinpoint control, that you can have success.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You know, I wouldn't mind drafting Kikuchi around the 17th, 18th round, and just seeing what you have. Merle Kelly's probably going to go undrafted in most leagues. I wouldn't mind nabbing him in the last round, just because he did have all those strikeouts in Korea. Who knows? Maybe you'll strike, you'll catch lightning in a bottle. But, I mean, there's so many other pitchers I'd rather have. I probably won't end up getting him. Like, I already mentioned Josh James and Alex Reyes, Freddy Peralta. All three of those guys are going to go at the end of drafts. I'm going to get them in every single league. So I probably won't end up with him. But if you're in a deeper league, I think Kelly's someone to keep an eye on. I think he's going to have decent ratios there in Arizona now that they have the humidor. And I think he'll strike out some people, too. All right, now stash players, there's two other great prospects we haven't talked about who are probably going to be called up at some point in the season, not late, maybe by the All-Star break. Forrest Whitley, Fernando Tatis Jr., these two are studs as well.
Oh, yeah, like both of these guys a lot. And, you know, Tatis coming off of an injury, I think he busted up his thumb or something like that last season, which cut his year short. But, boy, he went down to the Dominican Winter League and was just amazing. Do you see there was a tweet of a highlight of a bat flip of his when he hit a big home run in a Dominican Winter League game? And I want to see him in the major leagues just for that. I mean, that the kind of passion and everything that he plays with.
He's exciting.
Fantastic. And the skills to match, you know, power, speed, And I think just a fantastic future. He's a top three prospect, I think, for me when I get my prospect rankings. We talked about Vlad Jr. and Eloy Jimenez. I think Fernando Tatis, for me, is my number three.
You know, in terms of pure MLB prospects, I've got Tatis number two ahead of Jimenez. I released my top 500 fantasy baseball prospects. I have Tatis number five because he's going to be playing in San Diego, and I think the power is going to be a little bit limited there, the RBIs and the runs. He's going to steal bases. He's going to hit some homers. His batting average is going to be fine, but just turned 20 earlier in January. So I don't know what he does right away. He's got the upside of somebody like Soto, but right away, I don't think I want to draft him and stash him. I'd much rather draft Whitley, who I think is ready to roll.
Yeah, I agree. And then Forrest Whitley, you know, I think we could say fairly confidently that he may have the best stuff of anybody in, you know, among all the prospects. He was in the Fall League as well. Outstanding strikeout numbers. Those guys had an almost impossible time trying to hit him. And for, again, an organization like the Astros that's very good at bringing their prospects along, I think Forrest Whitley has huge upside, and I think they're going to need him. You know, you talked earlier about Dallas Keuchel not being there and what their rotation is going to look like. Forrest Whitley can be an impact kind of starter for them, so I could see him in, you know, the first half of the season possibly being up and starting for the Astros.
Last year in the second half, Walker Buehler was the third best pitcher in all of baseball. I think Forrest Whitley is right behind him. He's better than him in terms of pure stuff. I don't think his pitchability is quite as good as Buehler. I think these two are going to be Cy Young contenders every year for the next decade as long as they stay healthy. Whitley is just absolutely dominant. He's 6'7", 195 pounds, so he's going to fill out and maybe end up throwing even harder. But in the minors, he's pitched 137 innings, struck out 203 batters. That's 13.3 Ks per nine innings. I mean, he is going to be one of these monsters that could touch 250, 270 strikeouts one year.
I agree. And, you know, he is going to be with the Astros in spring training. So
yeah.
I think that's a positive sign. And, you know, if he picks up some stuff from Justin Verlander and Garrett Cole.
Oh, man.
My goodness, what an amazing rotation they could have.
They're going to win 110 games again, aren't they?
I'll tell you what, they're definitely set up for a long-term dynasty there, that's for sure.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, any other rookies on your radar that you think are going to contribute right away in a standard redraft league?
I think, you know, we talk about catchers and not liking them. I kind of like Francisco Mejia there in San Diego. Again, if you're taking flyers on guys, Mejia is not a bad guy to take a flyer on. You know, again, excellent contact skills, hit for a very good average in the minor leagues. And I know I remember last spring talking to a scout who said that he thought that Francisco Mejia could go into the major leagues and hit 300 right then and there. And so, I mean, that is very high praise.
I would take that.
Yes. So somebody who can do that is not going to hurt you, even if he's not playing every day and has to sit a little bit behind, you know, Austin Hedges or whatever the Padres are going to do. But he's one of those guys, I think, that can make a definite impact. And it would not surprise me, as we're talking about pitching prospects, if Brent Honeywell, you know, comes in again.
Good name. Forgot about him.
For players who, you know, are coming off of surgery or have been under the knife, obviously the injury questions are there. But again, coming off Tommy John, was maybe it was about this time or right at the beginning of spring training when he tore that UCL. He's had a good full year now to get back into things. Probably won't be ready, I don't think, for the beginning of the season in spring training, but, you know, come May, June, second half of the season, you know, here's a guy that was an MVP of the Fall League before, or at least the Fall Stars game. And
he's got that nasty screwball. Nobody can hit that.
Yes, he's got five different pitches, including the screwball, which is such a novelty that hitters get up there and they have no idea what to do with it. I think he's definitely a guy to keep your eye on. If you can stash him as a prospect, then be sure to do that because it could certainly pay off.
That's a good one. He's filthy. Yeah, I want to go back to Mejia really quick because here's the best thing about him. is he's going to play more than most catchers because he doesn't just catch. And they've got Austin Hedges there as well. He plays third base. He plays outfield. His bat is going to be in the lineup, and he can hit right away. If I don't get Real Muto or Wilson Ramos, which I'm going to try to do in almost every league, then I'm going to fall back on Mejia, and I'm going to reach for him to make sure I can grab him. I can't believe I didn't bring up his name. And I think a lot of it depends on what teams do in spring training. There's a lot of guys on my radar who, depending on what happens, Keston Hiara for the Brewers, Brendan Rodgers for the Rockies, Dakota Hudson for the Cardinals. Not as much upside with Hudson, but he's probably going to be in the rotation. All the Braves pitchers. I mean, they've got like four rookies who could be really good, especially Mike Soroka, and then maybe Bo Bichette and Jesus Luzardo in the AL. There's a lot of guys to keep your eye on, so we'll be talking about them in the podcast moving forward. Let's move right into Dynasty Prospects to round out the show here. Now, if Acuna, Soto, and Walker Buehler were still prospects, would they all be in your top five, assuming Vlad Jr. and Aloy are there with them?
I think that's a pretty darn good top five. I would have to say so. I might put Acuna ahead of Eloy, but that's just splitting hairs. And those other guys certainly have proven from their rookie seasons how good they are.
I would probably have Aloy number five on that list, actually. And Vlad Jr. is number one. He's mm-hmm. better than Acuna in terms of dynasty. Would you agree?
I think so. Yes. Yes, indeed. We can't say enough good things. And I'm sure we will say even more of them as the season progresses about Vlad Jr.
So would you take Vlad Jr. ahead of Mike Trout and guys like that in dynasty? Or if you had the 1-1, would you still take Trout?
I'd still go with Trout. I mean, it's ridiculous.
And I'd go with Betts and Jose Ramirez too, and then probably Vlad and Acuna.
Betts, yes. Jose Ramirez, I would have to think about and would probably take Vlad over him, just because you've got so many years, you know, in that dynasty format to have him on your team. It's just amazing to think what he could accomplish over his career.
And there's just no risk. That's the thing with prospects. Everyone's like, well, I can trade him because who knows? Maybe he's just a bum. He's not. Mm-hmm. There's no risk whatsoever. There's as much risk with him as there is with Manny Machado.
Exactly. And so that's what makes him exciting, especially, you know, at 20, breaking into the major leagues. It's going to be fun to watch him for an entire career.
All right, after that top-tier prospects, Vlad, Aloy, Tatis, who we talked about, Whitley, Robles, Tucker, is there a name that really excites you? What about Joey Bart? Have you seen him play? Because this guy, I mean, we talk about the catcher landscape. This guy's going to be a monster. He could be an MVP candidate someday as a catcher.
I'll tell you, I have not seen much of Joey Bart at all. And again, I'm looking more along the lines of major leaguers and guys that are, you know, fall league caliber. That's where my focus is. So guys like Bart, Mackenzie Gore, guys like those that have such high upsides but are so young, I don't really have a great feel for them. But, you know, you talk about those, you know, those upper tier prospects. I'm really interested, to tell you the truth. You mentioned him just in passing, but Jesus Luzardo is somebody that could certainly be a name to watch for this season. Again, a guy with had surgery, and the Nationals traded him to Oakland in that Sean Doolittle, Ryan Madsen. And to get Jesus Luzardo and Blake Treinen was such a huge win for Oakland in terms of their building process. And you know, a left-hander who's got all sorts of different pitches, I think he's a guy that could quickly vault himself up into the top tier prospects.
Absolutely agree with that. Someone else who really excites me is Brendan McKay. He's that first baseman and pitcher for the Rays. I really think they're going to try to make him a true two-way player. Now, his bat needs to come along a little bit more if that's going to happen. Otherwise, they're going to give up on it. But he's going to be a fun one to watch. And then there's this kid in the Cardinals farm system. And maybe it's just because I'm a big Cardinals fan that I'm especially excited about him. But Malcolm Nunez, he's really far away. He's probably not a top 100 prospect yet. But he's someone I want to keep my eye on because he just put up the single best season in Dominican Summer League history. He batted 415. With a 774 slugging percentage. He was just, I mean, we put up Barry Bonds numbers, and a lot of people are saying, well, his body's just too mature. There's not as much upside there. His bat-to-ball contact skills are incredible. He's got all the power in the world, but he's not like gonna, you know, get that much better. He's from Cuba, where he was already one of the best hitters in the league as a 16-year-old. And I just think, Albert Pujols was the same way. His body was already mature. He wasn't going to get that much better, but his bat to ball and power were there. We'll see what happens with Nunez. I'm excited about him.
I'll throw another name along those same lines. If Nunez is what, 17 or something like that?
Yeah.
Another teenager. Keep an eye on Christian Robinson of the Diamondbacks, outfielder.
Great call, yes.
18 years old.
From the Bahamas.
Yeah, physical skills are ridiculous. So just, you know, if you're in a super deep prospect league, and I've got one of those, you know, I've got a dynasty league where everybody in the world is already taken, and I hope nobody is listening who's in the league, but he's one of those guys that you could possibly get now. And if you're not worried about how long it takes in a few years, you could be sitting on a gold mine.
I snuck him into my top 100 prospects as well. And I've got him, I'm writing a breakout prospect section, and he's going to be the main picture on the top because he's the guy that comes to mind. I'm glad you brought him up. Is there anyone you could see breaking out into the next super prospect? You mentioned Luzardo, Mackenzie Gore. I've got Wander Franco in there. Have you seen him play?
You know what? I had him on my list as well. When we're thinking about guys that could be way, way off theoretically, but in terms of physical talent, Wander Franco was the guy that jumped off the page for me.
He could be the number one prospect this time next year.
He very well could. And I think he was one of in the international class. I think he and Robinson were maybe the top two that were signed in 2017. So those guys, if they keep making progress, I mean, Franco was fantastic in his first pro year. The thing I like about him, though, and I haven't seen him actually, but in terms of the scouting reports and everything, contact rate off the charts. You know, over 90% contact rate, a high walk rate. If he can do that and continue to, you know, make gains as he moves up the food chain, we could be watching a superstar.
Yeah, tons of power as well. He's kind of a smaller guy, 5'10", 190, but the boy can hit. He is really, really talented. I've got a couple other names for you if you're in one of these deeper leagues with prospects. Andrés Giménez, he's a very high upside shortstop for the Mets. The hitting tools haven't come on. If you look at his stats, you're going to say, this guy. No, he's got a lot of upside. And then some real dark horses. George Valera, he was hurt most of the year last year for the Indians. I could see him surging up, kind of like Joe Adell, who's in the top 10 prospects, did this time last year, going from 100 to 10, kind of like Juan Soto did a couple years ago. And then Luis Patino, another pitcher for the Padres. They've got like 20 of them who are really good, but this guy is filthy.
Very nice. I had Joe Adell as a guy that I wanted to mention at some point today for that exact same reason of the progress that he's made very quickly.
Besides Whitley and Tatis, is there a player you could come up see coming up midseason that would light the world on fire like Soto did?
Wow, Adell might be that kind of guy. I mean, he's really young again.
He seemed really far away, but then again, so did Soto. So
right, exactly. I think one of a name that we haven't mentioned yet, but a guy that's pretty high on prospect lists, or at least rising quickly, is Alex Kirilloff of the Twins, outfielder. Was at high A, I think, last year. But again, young and solid skills, great on base percentage, can hit for power as well. I think he's a guy that could possibly take that kind of jump from, you know, off the charts. If the Twins suddenly, you know, start being contenders and need a jolt, I think he could be a guy that could come up and provide that.
I've got two other names. They were both Cuban sensations. Yordan Alvarez plays for the Astros, but, you know, he doesn't really have an immediate path to playing time in Houston. OPS over 1,000 last year. And then Luis Robert, he was out in the Arizona Fall League, and you got to see him play. I mean, I think he's got the most raw talent of any minor leaguer outside of those top five names, but he just hasn't quite put it together yet. So I could see that happening for him. Now, Steve, I did have a couple questions that are more of my specialty that I just wanted to get out there. International imports, is there a top guy next year that's going to be a superstar? His name's Tetsudo Yamada. They call him the Mike Trout of Japan. He's a second baseman. Go look him up. And then Yoshitomo Satsugo is kind of like a Nelson Cruz. They're both going to be coming over next year, and I think they're going to be top 100 players right away. So if you're in a league that allows it, I would go scoop them up next year if you've got deep dynasty format. And then there's not really a transcendent talent in the 2019 MLB class. Bobby Witt Jr. is the closest. He's kind of got like Trey Turner upside with more power. Adley Rutschman is most likely to be the number one, but he's not transcendent. If that's what you want, go read an article on 15-year-old Blaze Jordan, most power for any high schooler ever, maybe. I mean, he was hitting countless upper deck homers in MLB stadiums as a high school freshman, and like I think he plays third in a college home run derby as a 14-year-old. This guy's incredible.
I have heard of Blaze Jordan, and had him written down for that deep league I was telling you about. And the other thing I remember too, you mentioned Bobby Witt Jr. Did get a chance to see him. The Futures game, they had a prospect home run derby, and Bobby Witt Jr. made it to the finals. Can't remember if he won or not, but to watch him hit home runs at that young an age was pretty impressive. So that kind of stuck with me as, you know, it's easy to remember. Oh, Bobby Witt.
16, 17-year-old who's running 30 feet per second. That's like top 10 in the MLB, and he's got exit velocities, 110 miles per hour. This guy is a machine. His dad played in the bigs too.
Yep, that's why I think a lot of people who reach back a little in terms of their memory banks will remember him.
All right, Steve, I've got two more quick questions for you. Is it better to draft farm players for long-term upside, or do you prefer immediate impact?
I'll tell you what, unless the talents are transcendent, I prefer guys that are closer to the major leagues. And that's the difference or the difficult thing when I'm trying to do my prospect rankings for fantasy purposes is you've got to balance the contributions they can make right away versus, you know, what kind of great player they could be down the road. And because prospecting is such an inexact science, I think the further down the road you look, the better chance you have of screwing things up. So that's why, you know, the Forrest Whitleys of the world and the Brett Honeywells and obviously Vlad Jr. would be one either way. But guys that can come in and contribute this season or towards the middle of the season, I think those guys are the ones that rise to the top for me.
If you've got two farm spots, I definitely agree it's who's going to contribute the most. If you've got 10, I'm going for the upside. Like, if it means waiting 4 years for a 16-year-old like Vlad Jr. or Malcolm Nunez, you can bet that's going to pay off tenfold over a even mediocre piece like Dakota Hudson, who is going to help this year. But I would much rather go for 5 lottery tickets and hope you get one superstar than go for 5, you know, mediocre pieces who you could get at the end of the drafts most years anyway.
Great point, because, yeah, the depth of your farm system determines how risky you can be and how important those spots are. I've got an NL and an AL keeper league, and our farm teams are 4 players each. So that's kind of like the sweet spot where you always want to maybe keep a couple of spots open for the guys that can really be superstars down the road. But the other spots, you want to get guys that could come in, can help you, and you can churn those spots so you have them open again for next year when you draft.
All right, here's the last question for you, Steve, and I think this is maybe the most important one. Obviously, our analysis on players is important, but if you can't figure out how to deal with the information, there's not really much you can take from it. How do you evaluate prospect rankings? Like, when you look at these, how do you translate them into information for fantasy baseball?
Yeah, it's one of the things I look at. A lot of the prospect rankings that you see from, you know, the major sources take defense into consideration, which doesn't help us in fantasy other than the fact that it keeps them in the lineup. But with these guys, as good as they are and as high as their ceilings are offensively, we're going to assume that they're going to be in the lineup whether they play defense or not. So I just look a little bit toward maybe downgrading guys that are very, very good defensively if they don't have the offense to back it up. And again, one thing that I do is I prioritize hitters over pitchers, if at all possible.
Great call.
Just because it's so tough. Injuries can affect pitchers. And even guys that are super high ceiling guys end up a lot of times, Alex Reyes, we talked about, Brett Honeywell, the list could go on, Forrest Whitley.
Then you've got Alec Hansen, who just all of a sudden walked 8 guys per 9 innings. That stuff happens to pitchers.
Yeah, and the surgery, the Tommy John surgery can come at any time. And so it derails them. It'll take them, you know, an extra year to get back to where they once were. So because of the uncertainty with pitchers, I think it's a reason enough to, if you're in a bind and guys are essentially the same, always go with the hitter over the pitcher.
I love that. There's a term, tin stap, which means there is no such thing as a pitching prospect. And that's changed a little bit over time. But overall, like if you're taking 10 pitching prospects, three of them are going to turn out. You take 10 hitting prospects, eight of them are going to turn out. So I like that advice. I've got two more pieces. You mentioned the defense. Playing time is not considered in these areas. Like you look at Dellin Betances when he was with the Yankees. Of course he was ranked high because he was really good, but he had no spot in the rotation when you've got, you know, five guys being paid $15 million a year. So that's important to consider when you're looking at prospect rankings. And then ballparks, where are they going to be playing? In Colorado, a hitter might not be as good. Garrett Hampson's probably not going to be in Baseball America's top, you know, 80 prospects. In fantasy baseball rankings, you bet he is because he's going to be playing in Coors. So you have to consider all that, what the situation is. It's all important. And by the way, I just released my top 500 prospects list. Now, it is premium for you, but there's a lot of free information out there as well that I'm posting. So you can check that out. Steve, this was a great show. I really enjoyed talking to you. I always do. And you provided lots of great information. Thank you for taking the time to come on.
Thanks so much, Bobby. Always a pleasure talking to you, and good luck in those drafts this year.
Thank you. And don't forget to check out Draft Wizard, guys. We have it up on the website. For Steve Gardner, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your baseball.